This is Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook, coastradio.org, wherever you are in the world. Squamish, are you listening? Robin, Sydney, Omaha, and how about Tessa and Sev in Seashell? And of course, New York, East Side. Hope all's well. Susan and West Side, if you're listening, and California and Wyoming, anywhere in the world. Thanks for being here, folks, on this lovely, gray, rainy day. It's 50 near, actually, it's about 46 degrees. And windy. The wind keeps picking up. And the rain also keeps picking up tonight. Again, and west-southwest winds gusting to 35 miles per hour, plus rain. Saturday and Sunday, rain and about 45 degrees during the day. Snow, watch out, and it could be, it's coming down. That is, the level is lowering. I don't know if it's going to hit us Sunday to 700 feet. Depends where you live, I guess. It is time for Arts Live and Local. And, well, you know, as long as I've got them here, let's let the artist speak for himself. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Carol.
As much as he's able. It's
thanks for doing this.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you're at least walking and talking a little bit. Did you get all your work in already?
I did, yeah. Midweek, it went up really quick and
good.
All fit together. Kind of magically locked into place.
Good. So now your body is kind of...
Yeah, it's a relief. It's always a relief.
Good, good. So tell us what we're... Well, first, let's have a little background for those people who don't know you. Roger's lived here how many years?
Oh, what is that? 32 years?
Is it? Yeah.
Yep.
Straight, all the way through.
Well, I had a year break for a while. I went back to Ann Arbor and did a bunch of shows, specifically kind of to do some art shows for art that was taken to Europe. So yeah, that was a long time ago. It's 28 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And taken to Europe because you have shown in Europe as well.
Yeah, I had a friend who had a trying to even remember. Well, he had connections in Europe as a outsider artist, and to various modern art trends, which you know probably don't really mean anything anymore.
I was going to ask you once again to tell folks, because it does seem to change the term outsider art.
Yeah, I mean, I think what is it's kind of funny because not only have I felt that I belong to that, but I've also kind of, didn't give it too much significance either, just because it's kind of just a category you get lumped into. But I think from my experience with it, it's kind of evolved over the years of what it's come, kind of coming to public awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And it just used to be a kind of, like anything, it didn't even have a category at one time. It was just, the earliest examples were like art that was made from people who were institutionalized for their whole lives, The Surrealists were really, André Breton was really into a lot of those artists and collected it. Even just a little kind of snapshot on outsider art. I think that really... gained prominence in the 40s. You had somebody like Jean Dubuffet, who was completely antithetical to Picasso. I just like the story of Jean Dubuffet. He had a neighbor, the concierge in the building, brought a drawing that her son did to him, and he praised it like, this is better than any work Picasso has ever done, because it's just so unschooled and mm-hmm. it's raw and direct. So that's kind of where it came from. There's no there's no like educational apparatus that interferes with the expression. It's just direct expression. But, you know, I think we've gotten to where that's become like, you know, you can sell your work on eBay calling yourself an outsider artist.
Yeah. Seems to be that way, doesn't it?
No. Yeah. So it doesn't mean much anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So your art is definitely inside the Pacific Northwest. As a matter of fact, this show is called Pacific Northwest Trees.
Mm-hmm.
I hope to see the show before, but I have seen some of the images. Imaging Gallery does a wonderful job of posting. Why don't you tell us, though, what you're capturing here? Because your art over the years is quite varied, quite diverse, and yet you keep coming back to some of the certain themes. So.
Certain themes. Yeah, I mean, I guess you've probably seen that before. I don't know. I can't think of an example. But the exact example I think of is, kind of did a series of shows. Like, I think I got my really first pro gallery in 1986.
Where was that?
In Birmingham, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Very exclusive suburbia.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was kind of very much in the realm of, like, expressionist art. I was dealing with a art collector who collected German expressionist art.
You know,
from the German expressionist area. So,
wow.
You know, World War I to World War II, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But he liked my work.
Huh. Nice.
But yeah, so I was doing that. And at that time, you know, I mean, like, I think even in the artist statement, I kind of alluded to, like, the earliest roots of that, like, Romanticism, like, Caspar David Friedrich, that type of thing, that, you know, it's powerful work. There's always this kind of, and, sorry, I'm going off on a tangent.
That's
but it's
okay.
Like,
we have a few minutes. Go ahead. I like your tangents.
You know, to me, it's like art is it's either Apollonian or Dionysian, and I'm kind of on the Dionysian side of things. You know?
More fun, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tame all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can think of examples back to 1988. In fact, so in 86, I'd gotten a grant from the Michigan Council for the Arts. And I kind of, you know, focused a little bit on some of those, like, romantic, you know, I don't know, you know, what do you call it? You know, it's like the landscape. I mean, you have these cliches you use, but, you know, the kind of like the brooding or the emotional side. So I definitely have that connection. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make, that, you know, I've done this for a while.
Mm-hmm. And the write-up says, though, abstract and representational.
Yeah, so what's your take on that?
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm kind of chuckling, because most of what you do for me is abstract.
Mm.
Or it I can see, but I don't use those words myself.
The categories, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and I think those categories mean more or less at different times depending on our culture and how mm-hmm. we experience,
just like outsider art. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's going on in the art world, what's going mm-hmm. on socially, you know. I think they were really, really living this kind of pluralist era where there's a lot of voices that you can pretty much do anything. You know, it's no longer right or wrong, you know.
Was it ever? For an
artist. I think artists in particular yeah. also suffer from black and white thinking.
Mm.
You know, it can be very dogmatic about what's mm-hmm. the right path.
Especially when they look at their neighbors. Like the guy who liked the kids' art better than
the guys. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's extremely dogmatic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, but you also mentioned that they're large pieces. Again,
yeah, most are pretty large. I mean, I kind of feel like, man, Well, watch who I step into here. No, but I think there's a kind of thing that Terry's doing with the Imogen where there's kind of like, there's this kind of heavy hitter vibe, you know, and that's always kind of, you know, heavy hitters always make big statements and you always got to talk big, you know, and that's kind of that whole, like that's another shtick
mm-hmm.
that happens. And, you know, just another thing that's gotten handed down in art. And I think you can be really powerful on an extremely small scale, but it's just that kind of thing that painters do. You know, they want to get attention, right? So, yeah.
That's interesting, though. So when you're working, because obviously, you work on paper and then on
you know
canvas
what?
Or what? What did you do?
Well, so the whole ideology for this show was kind of like... I had gotten a box of oil paints from somebody and, you know, it was just kind of just sitting there and I was like, cause I had done the acrylic thing for decades.
Yeah.
I think like 20 years or something. Originally I had done oil painting. And so I was like, I just got to give this a chance and see what happens again.
Mm.
And if I like it, then I'll like think about developing it. And so I did like two paintings right away, right off the bat that were like really, and so one of them's in the show. There's two of them, but one's the, it's called Hospital Parking because it's a tree over by Columbia Memorial Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, to me, that was like the whole, you know, genesis of the show.
And how did you feel about working in oil, going back to it?
Oh, it seems so much more natural.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, every medium has its technicalities that, you know, right like a week before the show, I started getting all these like problems happening that I wasn't used to. And, it's hard to fix.
Like drying. Not
yeah, and this weather and right. working in a basement.
Right. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So are you going back to acrylic or are you going to?
Yeah, I think I am.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, then catch this show, folks, because this is the oil show. And there are a couple of pictures in the Coast Weekend, but also... As I said, when I read my underwriter, it's very simple, imogengallery.com, I-M-O-G-E-N, gallery.com. And you can read about the show. Best of all, obviously, if you don't live here and you're not going to be here tomorrow night, it might be harder to see in person. But that, of course, is the best. And even better, it's the most fun to come on opening night. Especially if the artist is able to be with us. And but I find it's even more satisfying to go back or head over there today and see the work when there's nobody around so you can actually stand and enjoy it and study it and spend some time.
And nobody looks at paintings during openings.
No, it's more just getting a feel and then enjoying the people and the artist.
Yeah.
So that is, though, the second Saturday is tomorrow evening, January 11th, 5 to 8 p.m. Imogen Gallery, again, is on 11th Street. It's just south of Marine Drive. Actually, it's right on that corner, 11th and northeast corner. Of 11th Street. And then you can also check out some of the other galleries happening. The Secret Gallery is presenting the graphic short story artist, Philip Barash. Is that right? Barash, yeah. I'm not sure how he pronounces it, but I've seen his work. Wonderful. Hand-hewn, number 3. River Sea Gallery, we're wishing a happy 85th birthday to Noel Thomas. And I'm sure most of us around here are familiar with his work, but it's also a benefit for AVA's Astoria Visual Arts Miss B. Johnson Fund, which is used for young artists, high school kids. Tempo Gallery is featuring Captain Thrawn Riggs and... The Bridge and Tunnel Bottle Shop and Tap Room. I don't know much about this, but it writes up live performance by Seth Howard. with his favorite magic illustrations and his unique style of close-up magic. I don't know how literal that is, folks. You just have to check it out. 1390 Duane. This is a nice small town. You can get to all these, or at least some of them.
It's hard to these days.
It is very hard, especially there's another new one, relatively new, the Vaulted Gallery. It's actually just across the street from the Bridge and Tunnel, the Vaulted Gallery, 1389 Duane, with James Crow, a new photographic collection on canvas. And the AVA artist, we have some new artists in residence, AIR, and this is Karen Neal, N-I, Neal, which makes me think she is Celtic, because that's what women use, O for men and N for women. We'll find out. I Robbed the Woods. I think that's in conjunction with your show, Roger. And that's 372 10th Street. That's the corner of 10th and Duane upstairs. And there's a whole bunch of folks there. AVA Center is downstairs with Northwestern Songs of the Americas, an exhibition by Tim Janshar, or Janshar, reflecting on Astoria. And the Astoria Studio Collective is upstairs again. They have a whole, that blue building is just full of people. There's also lots of new places, including the Penpoint Art of Pat Kankkonen is at the Penpoint Gallery, Inside World, 1310 Duane. I haven't been to these places, so I'm hoping to check them out. And the West Coast Artisans, lots and lots of stuff happening. Check it out between 5 and 8 or any day. You can just start walking around and checking out some of these places. Be sure to come over and see Imogen Gallery. And don't miss the back room with Hi-Hi lights, paper, and Roger, my guest, Roger Hayes, art in the rest of the gallery, Pacific Northwest Trees. And if you didn't know that was the name of it, see if you can figure it out. Thanks so much for coming in, Roger.
All right, thanks,
Thanks,
Carol,
for keeping the art coming. Roger is also a musician, a former KMUN programmer, a chef, and a counselor, and lots of other things. So, he's not wearing any hat right this second, and he should. So stay healthy. Thanks for coming in, Roger. And I've got some music from Puerto Rico. So we are sending out our hopes and wishes that the people of Puerto Rico will be able to make a quick recovery and that the government, their government, your government, my government of the United States, does the right thing.
La vida mía a mi manera, por eso yo vivo la vida mía. vida en tiempos que son difíciles.
A mi manera.
Que si esto, que si aquello, los de falsa moral siempre dicen.
A mi manera.
Al parecer nunca hay salida complaciendo a los demás.
A mi manera.
Pocos indios, pero muchos jefes de cuestionable integridad.
A mi manera.
Vivo en paz y en armonía y a mis hermanos ayudando.
A mi manera.
No me interesa el partidismo, pero la injusticia la combato.
A mi manera.
Solo tengo una respuesta para los que viven criticando.
A mi manera.
El camino se hace andando, viviendo a tu manera. Apréndetelo.
Yeah, you got that, folks. Okay, well, so much going on around here. I have one of my favorite specials here, and that would be Iris Sullivan Dare. She's doing it again. She's dying again in a good way. D-Y-E-I-N-G. That is tough because when you say it out loud,
it always sounds terrible.
It sounds like, what?
I know, my sister's like, you have to stop saying natural dying and start using botanical dying or plant-based dying or something else.
I never even thought that's right. That's funny.
When I switched my major in college to study it, I talked to my grandparents and they were appalled. And it was a very awkward conversation until like 10 minutes in and they realized I was talking about color.
Oh my God, how awkward. Yes, and they were trying to stay calm. It doesn't work so
well.
Are
you feeling depressed? I'm like, no, I feel great.
Call the hotline. Okay, it's not a joking matter and neither is this dying. This is so rich, so extraordinary. Iris is giving a 3-day workshop. Is that right?
It is. It's a retreat over at the Sou'wester next weekend. So
right.
A week from today.
Right. She couldn't be here next weekend.
Yeah, right.
Because it is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 11 to 3 each day.
Yeah.
And do you still have room in it?
The last I heard, I think that there was at least one spot left. And I think it's worth, if you live locally, it's worth getting on the waiting list if they'll let you, because they're depending on what the weather is. I know for certain because I've had email contact with some students from Seattle and Portland. So if it's hard for people to get here from farther away,
right,
they might be more space open up the day that it starts.
So let's start right with that. How do people get on the waiting list?
Just by calling the Sou'wester.
Okay.
So, and I don't have their phone number in front
of
me.
We'll get it.
I can get it, though. It in a second.
Yeah, and you can research that. S-O-U apostrophe Wester, W-E-S-T-E-R. And let them know what's happening. So the name of this retreat is right there. It's terrific. Real Red, True Blue, and Fast Yellows, .. Using ancient natural dyes to create lasting beauty. First, it sounded like cars or something. Real Red, True Blue, Fast Yellow. But it is natural dyes to create lasting beauty. So what are we talking about?
So these are, I'm looking at the basically a trio of primary colors that can be used to create a full spectrum starting. And so each day will be dedicated to a different color.
Mm-hmm.
So Friday, we're looking at madder, which is the red of Eurasia. Madder is a plant in the coffee family, and it has, mm-hmm. she has a bunch of sisters in different parts of the world. So there was my ancestors in Ireland were using it, and they were using it to create Persian carpets. And, and there's a relative in the Micronesia, you know, like, Java has a matter relative, South America
how
as
well.
How
do you spell matter?
M-A-D-D-E-R.
Okay.
And so we'll be using Rubia tinctoria, which is the Eurasian cultivated matter.
So does any matter grow here?
I'm growing it in my garden.
You are.
Yeah. So, it's a relative of it that probably everybody has seen if they go for walks in the woods. It sometimes gets called lady's bedstraw or cleavers. It's when I did nature walks with kids, it was always the plant that they like to pick up and stick on each other because some people call it the Velcro plant. It's got little whorls of, you know, it's kind of sticky.
Right.
Matter is in that same family. It looks just like that, but it's much bigger, mm-hmm. and it gets to be like, you know, 3 feet tall, and it's this big loping beautiful thing, and I adore matter.
So where did but, you find seeds, or did you find a small plant, or
I ordered seeds from a there's a couple of seed companies that now carry natural dyes. It used to be, I used to know of one person in Texas that had matter seeds like 20 years ago when I first was started being super fascinated with this. But now, because there's kind of a renaissance of natural dyes happening, there's for instance, there's a seed company called Grand Prismatic Seed, which is in Utah now, but both of the principals have real connections with Oregon and worked here first. And there's a cooperative seed company in Maine called Fedco Seeds that also have good dye plant seed availability, as well as it used to be Horizon Herbs, but now I think it's called it's like Strictly Medicinal Plants or something. Mm-hmm. They also have
so are you?
And I have some seeds. If somebody knows me, you can just call me.
Going to ask.
Yeah, I have a lot of seeds for my plants.
In addition to having seeds, just being a resource. So because when you name these companies, you know there are so many.
Oh yeah, it's totally.
And also it's like. Who do you trust? So
right, yeah. So
if you
yeah, and I'll bring for sure. And the thing is about these colors, and these plants is that that it allows a person, you can grow these primary plants. So the three primaries of Eurasia were their version of indigo was called woad. We can't grow woad here because it's a noxious weed. You can go harvest it on forest lands east of the Cascades where it's noxious. It's a big problem plant. But we can grow Japanese indigo, the other temperate climate indigo plant. And so you can grow matter, you can grow indigo, and you can also grow weld, which is kind of like if matter's the queen and indigo's the king, then the high priestess is weld. So it's also an incredibly ancient plant. Its use is probably even older. It's like we've been using it since the Neolithic. We have hard evidence in the Neolithic for weld. So, and it's a beautiful, like basically fluorescent yellow, but you can tone it down and add it to all the others, and so you can get the full spectrum. So those are like Eurasia, but in the class, we're also going to investigate some of the set of primaries from the Americas, namely cochineal, which is the blood
that
of kings,
one.
You know.
we know that one.
And marigolds.
Oh,
which, so,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is are also
very
from the Americas.
Accessible.
Very accessible and easy to grow and beautiful. And
so in the workshop, people will learn about the plant and then how to go from plant to dye.
Yes.
And then?
So we'll basically be, we're going to go from raw plant to dye bath and then do a whole bunch of different samples and different fiber substrates. So both silk and wool and hemp and cotton.
Will people be bringing their own?
No, I get everything ready ahead of time.
Oh, okay.
They are invited to bring like a little bit to work on a special project in the evenings if they desire. We'll have a small project that everybody will get a chance to dye a silk scarf however they want, and I'll show them how to make it into a rainbow if they want to make a rainbow scarf.
Oh,
or
nice.
They could dye it solid red or solid yellow or whatever they want.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that is pretty exciting about this class is that we're also going to take those dye baths and turn it from a soluble form into an insoluble form, which is called a lake pigment. And then you can filter that out and use it to make paint or ink.
Oh, wow.
So you can mm-hmm. use the color from these plants also in other art mediums. So we'll learn how to do that. And we're going to make Mayan blue on Saturday, which is this really cool, I could go on and on about that, but very cool thing. That's a different process, but allows you to make this beautiful kind of turquoise pigment from indigo that you extract from plants you grow yourself.
So you said you switched your major in college.
Yeah.
But how much of this did you learn then, and how much have you been experimenting with and learning and growing and all that kind of stuff since?
I would say that I'm seriously obsessed and spend all of my all available time reading and this. And I've been in the last few years, I homeschooled my kids. And so this whole idea of lifelong learning is really big at our house. And and I decided a couple of years ago that I really needed to dive back into chemistry. So I've basically been like doing as much as I can to learn dye chemistry as much as possible. So reading things that I really don't understand until I get it. but
that's encouraging.
Yeah. And so in the three dyes, the kind of like madder, weld, and indigo, actually were part of a project that I did. I did a independent study in art history studying the Angiers Apocalypse tapestry in college, and recreated the using the dyes that were used at the time of its creation, which was the 1370s, prior to contact with the New World and cochineal, etc., to make samples in tapestry wool of the colors that are still bright today, which is 700 years later.
And where is that?
It's in France. Mm-hmm. It was. It's like basically the size of a football field if you took all the panels. It's this incredible, incredible.
And all of
art.
It, the color is still?
It's still pretty, it's pretty stinking bright still.
That's amazing.
It's in a big, they have a special facility built for it with that's climate controlled and stuff.
Yeah.
But the reds are still red and like, yellows are
fading.
Fade at a higher rate. It's why most flags of older countries are blue or red and not yellow and green, because indigo and madder were the most light and weather fast of the dyes.
Mm-hmm.
I could have stopped.
Practical kinds of, yeah.
Yeah, so these particular dyes I've been learning about and pretty deeply attached to for over 20 years. So I don't know what year was that I did that. Was like 93 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's over, yeah,
kind of, you know,
26
up there.
Years. That's, you're moving
older
right
than
along.
My, yeah. Longer
okay,
than
folks,
my husband.
This is happening, or any of the rest. This is happening next weekend. Check and see if there's still space, but if there isn't, sign up for the waiting list. And don't hold your breath, but think positively. How's that?
Yeah.
Because with the crazy weather we're having, it could be that. And also, it would be good. Can people contact you some way? For example, if they can't possibly do next weekend anyway, but they want to encourage you to do this again.
So yeah, for
how
sure.
Do they contact?
If I have a website, which is dreambirdstudio.com.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also on Instagram. So if you're Instagrammy, then I'm dreambird.studio. And on Instagram, but I teach a lot. I taught 12 classes last year in natural dyes. This year I'm going to get to teach at Sitka Center in July.
Wow.
I'm super
nice.
Excited by that.
Nice.
And of course it'll be the third annual Indigo Fest in
yes.
September. I also teach classes privately at my home, and also do some amount of traveling to other. I've been contracted by people to like do like a private class for them and at their location.
Different communities.
Different places.
Yeah. So it is hopeful.
Yeah, for sure.
And if you're just sort of hearing about this for the first time and saying, holy cow, this sounds incredible. You're right. It is. So go to dreambirdstudio.com. Now, do you have a contact there for the Southwestern?
I'm pretty sure that I'm trying to remember if
that's okay.
I think for sure on my Instagram there's a link to Southwester's
okay.
site You can, they prefer you call them. I think you can also email them, but I think the best
Possible. And I've got the phone number. If you call me after the show, I can give it to you.
Oh, excellent. So. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah. But in the meantime, again, this is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday next weekend, and it is a full 3 day.
Yeah, it is. It's only four hours a day, right. And then there's an optional open studio time in the evening that you don't have to do, only if you want to do a special project.
Right.
And so it'll be fun.
You don't have to become as obsessed as Iris, but she's a lot of fun to be with, I assure you.
I pretty much guarantee there'll be a lot of laughing.
Yeah, I can guarantee that too. Again, this is Real Red, True Blue, and Fast Yellows, using ancient natural dyes to create lasting beauty, happening at the Sou'wester in Seaview, Washington, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 17th through the 19th, from 11 to 3, with extra credit available. And check it out. And watch for her name, Iris Sullivan Dare. And she pops up in various places offering.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Yeah. This is wonderful. Okay, carry on. And I have a little music for you from Casey Neal. He's going to be at the Peninsula Performing Arts Center tomorrow night. And you're listening to KMUN Astoria.
Brother, if you are weary and worn, there's a light in the window for thee. Down on the docks where the battery roughs and Magdalene's daughters roam easy and free. At the Sportsman's Hall, 273 Water, Kid Burns is the man with a still in the pit. And he'll take your heart scratch for the odds on a match in a house full of vice, filth, and spit. And the night light. Strand, and the whiskey flowed like the Tigris through the Holy Land. The rats come flying out the gate, 100 if there's one. And the dogs are dropped into the roar and the din of the crowd who like killing for fun. And they swarm and they gnash and make a good play, but the terriers win in the end. And the winner kisses the bloody snout of the hound. He's surely man's best friend. And the night lights shine on the water street bricks. And we dance hand in hand down the East River Strand. Whiskey flowed like the Tigris through the Holy Land. The good are always the merry, so at John Allen's dance house next door, where the sailors they rest on a woman's breast with broken hearts as they cleave to the shore. The music would play and the people would sway and they'd hear it in the deep hardcore. Still the priests and the papers all called him a lecher and the wickedest man in New York.
That is Casey Neal. And Casey is going to be at the Performing Arts Center tomorrow with Johnny Connolly doing Celtic music and more. And also on Wednesday, PPAC is doing a Bob Dylan sing-along. I hope that wasn't... Yeah, I think that's coming up next week, too. So, but right now, I have...
Oh, I've had lots of jobs down below. Thought I missed them when fishing was slow. or the weather turned dirty, the price only 35 cents and the bank needed dough. But each year is a new honeymoon when the sockeye start running in June. All those beautiful fish I greet, each with a kiss, then pitch its surprise to its doom. No job make me feel half as high as when sockeye hit hard in July. The first fish cross the roller, we're shortly in clover. We kissing and then watch them die. Ben mi bis du Shen, nice to see you again. Ben mi bis du Shen, meet my deckhand. Ben mi bis du Shen, your loss is my gain. Yes, fish, it means you're looking grand. I could sing Bella, Bella, could sing Quel beau poisson. I could sing What a Beauty, after all I'm anglophone. Your loss is my gain, make me your bis du Shen. So kiss me and say you'll understand.
All right, so do you know who that is and why that is? It would have fooled me for sure. I have in the studio two extraordinary, I have three, but I'm going to start with two. The first two, the males, are John Broderick and Jay Speakman. And that's what you're hearing right now, believe it or not. So I'm going to bring it down. And welcome them. Hi, guys.
Hi, Carol.
And is that your typical Fisher poet song?
Just in honor of you today.
Thank you.
We have others.
You have like a stack. I've got a stack at home of music from the Fisher Poets Gathering. But Jay, whose voice you just heard, and John are the originals. I think, John, did you start this?
I made a phone call, yes.
You made a phone call. And how long ago was that?
Well, it was 23 years ago.
23 years. So that means this is the 23rd or 24th?
This is the 23rd annual, our 22nd birthday.
Okay. Yeah, those numbers kind of mess up. Okay. And that is for, if you're not from here, you still should know about this, because this is the first, and it happens in little bits and pieces now, but this is the world capital of the Fisher Poets Gathering. It happens the last weekend in February, and you are all welcome from wherever you are in the world to come here. I should warn you, though, that the place gets enormous and the venues fill. So if you have an interest, this is a terrific weekend to come to Astoria and Clatsop County, but get on it. Is there a website people should go to?
Oh, indeed, yeah, the Fisher Poets .org. Yeah,
okay.
Fisher Poets. You'll find it if you do a little searching.
There you go. Search it up, Fisher Poets Gathering, or Fisher Poets. Just put Fisher Poets. See how fast it happens the more words you put in. My third guest here is Nancy McCarthy. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
And Nancy, are you a Fisher poet?
I write a little poetry. I haven't been fishing for a long time.
Did you used to?
Oh, once in a while, yeah. In the summer with my parents, yes.
In a little boat with a fishing rod?
Yeah, something like that, or off the dock. Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. Is that a little bit different from what you guys are mostly talking about?
Well, that is, although some of us do that as well. But the commercial, you know, Fisher Poets Gathering is largely about the commercial fishing industry and its community, yeah.
Yeah. And people come from all up and down the West Coast as well as?
Well, the East and has people visit us from England before.
Yeah. BBC came over and did work on that too. So in order to sort of get back in shape, although if you saw these guys, you'd see they're in very good shape. But in order to get back in Fisher Poet delivery shape, they're doing a preview. And that's happening at the Cannon Beach Library, where Nancy McCarthy volunteers. And she's got lots to tell about that. The thing about it is, how big is this library?
I'm not sure what the square footage is. We hold probably, when we have a big event like this one, we can hold anywhere from, I think the last time we had, last year, we had about 80 people there.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
I've been in that library.
Yeah, believe it or not.
What do you do? Have speakers at the other end? It's not...
Well, we just kind of move our bookshelves. We have them on rollers. So we move them to the side and put chairs along as much as we can. And people do kind of hang over the shelves if they're, you know, if it gets to be, you know, standing room only.
Standing room only, for
We've had quite a few people in that.
So there is a chance, folks, that you could get in.
Oh, absolutely.
At the Cannon Beach Library, do you have a location for us?
It is, it's on Hemlock Street, right in the center of town, on the east side of the street. I have a post office box, but I don't have an address.
Names of those streets there?
Hemlock, it would be Hemlock and First.
First, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's the main street in Cannon Beach. Mm-hmm. It's actually the only street in Cannon Beach, I think.
Well, other than Spruce, yeah.
That goes all the way.
Right.
So, A Taste of Fisher Poet. What are you going to do? What's going to happen at this?
Well, Nancy and the library have invited a number of local Fisher poets to come spend a couple hours there. And those will include Gino Leach from across the river, and Dave Densmore will be there. Tom Hilton is going to join us this year. And
Rob?
Oh, yeah, Rob. I got a poem of his right in my lap right here. Rob Seitz is going to come down if he can get off the crab grounds enough to...
is he out fishing right now? Yeah.
Or crabbing. Yeah, toughing out the weather here.
Yeah. He's got a great little restaurant these days right here in Astoria. We love it. The fact that one of our Fisher poets turned into a restaurant is, like, wonderful for the locals. But you can come and eat there, too. Everybody's welcome, so, over on 9th Street. And so you're just going to sort of take turns reading? You're going to do some music? Must be if the two of you are involved.
Well, John and I will do some music. Yeah, that's kind of what people expect from us these days, I guess.
I know.
So we'll do that.
Yeah, I was looking for your instruments when I saw you come in, but they're not here, so we have to depend.
We, in a compressed time frame, we thought better of it. But we will play a set, and then we'll have the others follow us in some order, probably 20 minutes each or so. And
nice. Wow.
Keep it moving along. The last time we did this a year ago, it was pretty successful. It was a lot of fun.
I bet, yeah. So do you have some poetry with you
Well, I actually have a poem. Rob cites a little book here, 2.5 gallons per flush, and
2.5 gallons per flush.
Yeah, that's right.
Got it.
Got a picture of a deck bucket on the cover, of course.
That's great.
But you know, Rob is really clever. Writes a lot of self-deprecating, clever verse sorts of poems that are really entertaining. However, two of my favorite poems of his are a little bit different, and I'm really glad he included them in his book. And this one he calls Net Meditation. Any of us who've spent any time standing around on docks or hours and hours, you know, mending gear, know exactly what Rob's talking about here, so I thought I could read it. It's quite short. It goes like this. To mend a hole in a net, one must always begin and end on a 3-bar. The rest is just points and siders. Pass the needle through the mesh, then around it to make the knot. Repeat, repeat, repeat. Once your hands know how to fix the holes, your mind is free to go elsewhere.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And have you done netting?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just your own fixing? Or did you start? Because my daughter started with net mending right here. She learned how to mend nets and then later how to make nets. And I've never, but I knitted and crocheted for many, many years. I still could do it if I could use my eyeballs, but they don't work quite as well anymore. So, What was your route to fishing? Did you go through the net stage?
Oh no, I came to fishing as a deckhand in Kodiak back in the 70s. So it's been a long kind of circuitous route. But I'm only a salmon fisherman. I'm not toughing out like the crabbers are and stuff like that
now. So. But does every fisherman and every fisher need to know how to deal with the nets?
Unless they don't use nets.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know what to do on a long liner, but I can mend a net,
So, you too, Jenny?
Well, yeah, I fished as a seiner, and also I dragged with another guy. I was a deckhand on a small dragger. And, yeah, we're mending nets all the time.
Yeah.
Tear them up, take them ashore and mend them, put them back in the water.
Yeah.
So everybody had to know how to use a needle and twine. And
well, and that's why I'm asking, is you didn't take them to the net mending shop.
No.
You right on the spot or as soon as you get off.
Yeah, if you tore up and you're off on a drag and you're in shrimp, in this instance, wintertime is 2-hour run back home. There ain't no going back. You just fix it, put it back over the side. You can't afford to take the time. You have to be able to, if you rip up, you have to be able to sew it back together or you're finished. So it was sometimes not a very pleasant job, sliding around on the stern deck with water coming over the edge of the boat and trying to sew up a cod end that had ripped open or whatever. But
does that happen often?
Well, less now. In the days that when I was doing that, we didn't have the type of sonar that we have now. We had paper graph machines, so you could see what the bottom was doing, but it was very, very rough. You didn't know where you were, and a lot of times you'd tear up just inadvertently, get into hard bottom. Now you can map the bottom and know exactly where you are.
So do you have any a cappella songs?
Well, we dasn't try at this point, though. No. But I think Jay's got a poem right here if you want to.
Oh, good. Please, I'd love it, Jay.
I got a short one.
I have to say, folks, I wish you were here to see their faces when I asked them that question, the two of them.
Well, we know better than not to come completely prepared here. I took several trips north with some Canadians years ago, from Vancouver to up to Prince Rupert and the grounds north of there to fish for herring. And this was a particular trip we were three of us running together called Raiding Party. At New Bella Bella, we tie up the boats. A small group of natives has gathered outside the local grocery store, smoking, drinking sodas, marking time. We decide to mount a raid. Gathering a few tools, we leave the tiny harbor on foot, making our way along a winding road which leads out of the village. Just past a small sawmill where old-growth cedar is ripped into lumber, we arrive at the local dump. Under the watchful eyes of a half dozen eagles perched in a nearby spruce snag, six white men search the heap for plunder.
Mm. Wow.
We used to call it Walmart. Let's go to Walmart. The dumps up north are incredible because you're hundreds of miles from anywhere, so they don't bury everything. They just throw it in a particular spot, and the pickings are pretty good.
Go ahead. And let's see, where do we go? We went from the flushing to the plunder, and now we're back to John. What do you got, John?
Well, I've got in my hands one of Gino Leach's poems he's published in his little chapbook, Waterlogged. Uh-huh. And it's pretty hard to get your hands on a poem by Gino. When he sent his work to Pat Dixon to edit this thing, he sent his original manuscript in a manila envelope.
Oh,
Pat practically had a heart attack. So now we got some copies of this book around here. And also, you don't want to try to imitate Gino as you read.
No.
If you've heard him, you know there's nobody like him. But I love this poem here, and it honors folks who've worked hard in the industry shoreside here. It's called Uniontown Cannery Stiff. I used to buy him a bump at the Brass Rail Lounge. He was a busted-up old guy from Uniontown. Had a blown hip socket, was hunched like a question mark. Spent his life in red ball rubber boots, overalls, an oilskin apron or a freezer suit. Life beyond those sliding cannery doors wasn't in the cards. Earned his jack on wet, hard, cold concrete, in the slime, the slush, and the stink, heard the rattle and the babble, the hiss, the skid, and the roar, handled everything that swam or crabbed or quivered, from Irish lords to soup fin livers, seen June hogs hip boot high on the fish house floor. He bagged guts for mink, refilled Baraxo in the men's room sink, ran the hoist, forklifts, monkey wagons, and a butcher knife, de-iced shrimp, humped cake eyes, freezer crude dumped load eyes, been filleted by the cold east wind, sweat like a sauna in the summertime. Butchered crab, butchered salmon, shoveled Dover, Rex, Rock, and Dab, moved mountains of shrimp, been tsunamied by albacore, never pissed or moaned or whined, thrived on that steady grind, kept punching that cannery clock like some old gurried father time. Worked from the stink plant in Warrington to Union Fish, Sebastian Stewart and Anderson's, till he died on his feet, sharpening knives in the filet room. And etched in stone out at Ocean View is his name and a likeness of his red ball boots, and three words gouged deeper than a ditch: Uniontown, cannery stiff.
Oh, all right. I can just picture Gino doing that too. Hey, folks, it's going to be fantastic fun. This is January 19th, which is...
That is a Sunday at 2 o'clock, January 19th, at the Cannon Beach Library.
A Taste of Fisher Poet. And my guests have been John Broderick, whom you just heard, and Jay Speakman, and Gino Leach will be there, and Dave Densmore, Rob Seitz, and Tom Hilton. Now, Nancy McCarthy has other stuff going on at the library.
Yeah, we stay pretty busy at that little library. One of the big things that we have coming up is Writers Read. This is our second year for that, and we got quite the reaction last year, so we decided to do it again. This is kind of a warm-up, I think, to Fisher Poetry, because this is allowing people to, residents and visitors alike, to write about their views from the North Coast. Mm. The deadline for submissions for that is January 17th. That's a week from today. And they can write essays or poetry or stories, whatever they would like, as long as they limit it to 600 words. Mm-hmm. They can enter up to 3 entries. And then there will be a panel of judges that will do a blind judging and will select about, 10 or so submissions.
Wow.
And ask people to come and join us on February 28th to read their selections.
What fun.
And they can send them to the Cannon Beach Library at Post Office Box 486, Cannon Beach, 97110. Or they can email them to info@cannonbeachlibrary.org.
Okay, so is there a website, cannonbeachlibrary.org?
There's an email address, right, so that they can, and we do have a website,
you do.
And we
what
also have
that?
A Facebook page as well.
What's the website?
I think it's cannonbeachlibrary.org.
It probably mm-hmm. should be, if that's yeah. the. That sounds wonderful, and that's for anybody in where?
Anywhere, anybody who has either visited the North Coast or who lives on the North Coast.
Okay.
We had people from the peninsula read last year, and we had people from as far south as Tillamook. But anybody who wants to
submit.
To talk about their view from the North Coast, we keep it pretty general, so people have a lot to write about.
Are the instructions, like 600 words, et cetera, on that website, do you think?
Yeah, I would I would say check the Facebook page, and then we do have... we do have flyers out, and if they have any questions, they can call the library as well.
Sounds good. Okay, Nancy McCarthy, what is the phone number?
Oh, boy. 436-1391.
1391. Good job.
Yeah.
Okay, folks. We're out of time almost, but I have some other announcements I need to tell you. You're listening to some music in the background, Brad Creel and The Real Deal. They're going to be at the Hoffman in Manzanita tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Good luck tomorrow. Good luck, folks. There's so much going on. Here's what else is happening today. This is fabulous. The Sparrow Dance Company is at the... I'm going to have to turn down Brad Creel. He's too much fun to listen to. But you can catch him again tomorrow evening at the Hoffman. He's very funny. And Sparrow Dance Company tonight and tomorrow night, 7:15 at the new 1015 Theater, 1015 Commercial. 10 pieces of dance tonight and tomorrow night only.